Morning. I'll call to order the joint meeting of the House and Senate Education Committee. It is March 11th, approximately 8:10 a.m. In attendance today on the Senate side, oh, there we go. Now I can hear it. Are Co-Chair Meyer, Vice Chair Davis, Senator Stevens, Senator French, and myself, Co-Chair Thomas. And Representative Dick, if you'd introduce your folks,
Senator
please.
Davis.
Yep, Senator Davis, I did, yep.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have here Representative Kawasaki, Representative Buggy, and Representative Pruitt, and myself, Alan Dick. And I do have to announce, out of respect for people that have waited all week long to testify in front of our committee, Representative Seaton, thank you. Out of respect to people who waited all week here in Juneau to testify before our committee, we will have to leave at 9 o'clock, but I promise that we will watch the video and we'll, for whatever we miss, we're going to catch up on within a week or two. So I appreciate your understanding there.
Very good. Thank you. So good morning to everyone, and thank you for coming. Last year, we passed legislation establishing the Higher Education Career Readiness Task Force. They have been meeting in the interim, and yesterday and today represented their final meetings. We are here today to hear a report from the task force. Task force has issued a series of recommendations, which they started going over yesterday and are going to finish up today, is my understanding. Task force is composed of some of the most influential people in the field of education in Alaska. We'll let Senator Stevens introduce the members of the task force and start their report. And the House, as we just mentioned, will adjourn at 9, and the Senate committee is invited to stay and meet until the task force, with the task force until approximately 9:45, when they'll need to leave, those that are remaining, for their other meetings. So, thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to meet with all of the members of the Education Committee, both the Senate and the House. We've been working for some time. I think we've had six meetings, and basically our charge, just so you'll be aware, our title is Advisory Task Force on Higher Education and Career Readiness. And basically what our charge was is to try to figure out why we've had so many problems with remediation, so many students that need to take remedial classes when they go to the university or their colleges around the state, to improve retention of those students, to see that they actually graduate, because many of our students, it would appear, finish their first year and don't go on to the second, as students around the country, realizing that some of our students have the limited plans. They have a two-year or a four-year or even one class as their only goal. But for those that want to complete college, we want to look at that retention rate and find out what's going on and what we need to improve it, and basically then to improve graduation rates. So in my mind, at least, it comes down to three major issues that we are trying to figure out how to help on. The first is, when students leave high school, why are they not prepared to compete on the college level? And we know there are several issues that need to be looked at there. We need to work with the school district, the commissioners here, to try to figure out what we can do when students are still in high school to prepare them to compete in college. We also realize that the universities and colleges have a responsibility to make sure that the students, if they come to them unprepared, that they do prepare them and send them on their way through an educational program. The second thing I think is most important, I believe we've come to realize, is counseling along the way so that students know what they need to do in order to complete their college plans. And then the final thing, the final issue that you are all grappling with right now, the House has and the Senate is dealing with it, and that's scholarships and loan programs. So those are the three major areas. I just want to make a little caveat here is that where we are right now is that preparing for this meeting, we prepared sort of a laundry list of all of the issues that had come up along the way. In fact, think of it as a kitchen sink. So the report that you received had everything in it, whether it's something we intend to follow through on or not. It was somebody's idea, it was a suggestion, and it was on that list. Not necessarily where we are going. In fact, some of the issues, we threw them out summarily yesterday and decided we didn't want to proceed any further with those, but some of them are very important. What we have done is divide those suggestions up into five areas, and that's the report that you have. Parents, those parental issues, realizing those of us who heard the Joint Education Committee, and thank you to Representative Dick for arranging that, that meeting a couple of days ago in which the gentleman came from North Carolina and said, really said very clearly that parents are the first teachers of children. And under the area of parents, we realized that we need to have them involved and know, you know, what the children are doing and how they can help them to move along and prepare them for school. So lots of issues under the parental masthead. The second was teachers and how we assist the teachers to improve, to take improvement classes, to come to us prepared and through their careers to become even better. The third area was the districts, what the districts can do. The fourth, the state, which is the issue that probably affects most of us around this table, or at least the legislators. And finally, the university. So yesterday we did deal with those areas of both the parents and the university, and today we're going to be dealing with the rest of them. So with that as an introduction, let me have the folks around the table introduce themselves. So we have a large group on this task force. They've worked hard and attended lots of meetings around the state, in Anchorage, in Nome, in Seattle, in Fairbanks, and of course here in Juneau. So if you don't mind, I'll start at this end with Lolly Karpuk. Lolly, would you introduce yourself and let everyone know what your background is, who you're representing on this task force?
Koyana, thank you. As a Yupik person, I first would like to share that I'm a guest in Tlingit country, and I thank my host, the Tlingit people here. My name is Lolly Karpuk. I am from Moncton Village. I currently work as the coordinator of Alaska Teacher Preparation Project based in Fairbanks. My parents also are Johnny and Marianne Shepherd. I should also mention them. The grant that I administer along with Dr. Beth Leonard and Caitlin Weinberger is an Office of Indian Ed. Basically, it's three quarters of a financial assistance with to Alaska Native interns in their last year to become a teacher. The grant is peripheral to the established program of the School of Education. This grant is unique in that we have a research component with the goal of getting feedback to refine our teacher program at UAF. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Molly. Just remind folks to turn off your cell phones as I am doing at this moment.
Good morning. I'm Barb Angayak. I serve as the president of NEA Alaska. I'm a 30-year teaching veteran here in Alaska.
Wendy?
My name is Wendy Redmond. I'm the Executive Vice President for the Statewide University of Alaska System. I'm sitting in today for President Gamble, who's been unable to be here.
I'm Donald Pendleton. I'm the student representative of the State Board of Education. I'm a senior this year from NOE, but I'm a deputy contact student.
It's nice to have a real student around, I got to say that, you know, to make contributions and find out what the people are who most affected by all of us are thinking and what they're up to. Keith.
Good morning. I'm Keith Hamilton. I'm the president of Alaska Christian College. We serve almost exclusively rural Alaskan students to your college in Soldotna in partnership with the Kenai Peninsula College as well.
Senator Linda Menard, District G, representing Wasilla and Palmer, here to work on the task force.
Gary Stevens, Chair.
Paul.
Paul Seaton, member of the task force from the House.
Commissioner.
Mike Hanley, Commissioner of Education and Early Development, probably the newest member to this group, starting just this session, and continuing the work that former Commissioner Larry LaDue started.
I should say that all along the way we've said, well, wait till the commissioner gets here. We'll let him decide that. So he's he's working hard here. Eddie.
Thank you. Eddie James, Education Policy Coordinator for the Department of Education.
Thank you, Don.
Don Vance, President, Alaska Pacific University.
Steve Bradshaw, Superintendent of Schools, Sitka, Alaska. Also representing the Alaska Council of School Administrators and Alaska Association of School Administrators.
Good morning, Stephanie Butler, Director of Operations for the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, sitting in this morning for the Commission's Executive Director, Diane Barron.
I'm Hollis French. I represent West Anchorage in the State Senate. I'm also a member of the Senate Education Committee. And I guess I'd ask everyone to get closer to their mics like I am. It's a bad room for acoustics. It's hard to hear. So unless you can hear yourself coming back, I can't hear you either. Thanks.
Thank you, Hollis. And just think of you know, having a philosophical discussion in the midst of a basketball game. That's sort of what this room is like. But we're doing the best. I know it's hard to hear, folks, so please do. And I see a few new members. Sharon Sisna, Representative Sisna is here. Representative Kawasaki, were you introduced? You made that? Yeah. Anybody else we've missed?
I haven't been introduced, but I'm Senator Betty Davis, and I'm from Aces, and I'm on the Education Committee.
Thank you, Senator Davis. There are a couple of members online, and Peter Finn, who is from the University of Alaska Anchorage campus, and Fred Villa from the university. Gentlemen, are you with us? Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Fred. Well, okay, so I want to give you an opportunity, because I know you have a schedule to keep as well. If we have time, we'd be glad to get into some of the specifics on our sort of kitchen sink list, but some of the legislators who are with us may have some specific areas you'd like to discuss, something you'd like to bring up. I want to give you that opportunity now, if you care to take advantage of it, and let us know your thoughts of where this task force is going. We are working on you have the draft in front of you. The final report will be sent to you April Fool's Day, appropriate day to send that report to you, but you'll be getting it then. It'll include the issue of elevators on the left are only for senators, so I hope you're aware of that. We tried that last year. It didn't work too well. So anyway, I really would appreciate any comments any legislators may have to make sure that that we are headed in the direction that you think is appropriate. Representative Dick, anyone care to pitch in at this point, or if not, we'll...
Unless Representative Dick has something? I would just like to indicate, and I'll move this a little closer because probably did miss some of the introductions there that were made. So the concept of teacher preparedness, we passed a bill, we being the Senate Education Committee, earlier. Can we hear this? Representative Sisna, can you hear okay down there?
Yes, I could hear most of it.
Okay, well, most of it. We've got to get more than most of it here, I think. We've passed regarding teacher preparedness and... So that is obviously an issue. That one allows money for reimbursement for the teacher national certification. We thought that was important, so would like to hear maybe a little bit more on your thoughts on whether that was a good idea, what we did, or whether we should have expanded that type of thing. So that would be helpful for, I believe, us to know that coincides with what your thinking is, as well as actually the university's program, as far as the intake of teachers, the counseling of folks when they think that they want to be teachers, and maybe a little better understanding of what all that means. It sounds like many other occupations, that sounds like what someone might want to do until maybe they understand all that is really involved with being a teacher. And particularly in the state of Alaska, there are some real challenges. So I think that, and I don't know if there are any statistics that show that there's a huge dropout rate of the dropouts are anything to do with potentially teachers that change their mind or people that are in the program that change their mind. But we think that it's important that they understand exactly where they're headed. So just a couple of comments on that would be helpful for me anyhow.
As in a general sense, to start, we recognize, I think, the task force, the importance of the mentoring program, of assisting teachers, assisting young folks who want to go into teaching, and one of the things the university, legislature did a few years ago was to establish a dialogue on an annual basis with the Board of Regents. I think that was a major step forward. I think most legislators felt that as much as we love the administration of the university, Wendy, of course, included, we do realize that we really wanted to talk to the regents often, and we didn't have that opportunity. So that bill was passed, and that program has been established. I think we've gone through maybe 3 or 4 years of doing that. In general, I do believe that, that out of this, we want to make sure that there are better communications, not only with the Board of Regents, but also with the Board of Education. Often we only hear from the administrators. As important as that is, it's also important we have an open communication with both the Board of Regents and with the Board of Education. Looking around the room, see if anybody has any comments. Betty?
Yes.
Senator Davis.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, one of the issues that I have some concerns about, I was listening to the report that was given to Bahari and when Board of Regents were making their report, and some of the things that they were proud of was what the accomplishment had been in the area of reading. It's just the opposite at the K-12 level, because we're having more success in math but not reading. I just wondered if the two have met to talk about the techniques that they're using, what's making it the difference there, because that's where our problem is. Many of our students go off to school and they are not prepared and have to take the beginning courses before they can get to the regular courses, remedial. Did you address that at all in your task force?
Thank you, Senator Egan. Anyone care to take that? Department of Education, any comments on reading issues or on, and also on the teacher preparation and mentoring? I think we recognize, Senator Davis, the importance of reading, and of course the committee, the Education Committee, has heard yesterday from the folks in early reading. We're really trying to focus, as important as we realize that is, we're trying to focus on results of at higher ed and at workplace career readiness. So we realize that, what often happens in the legislature, we give some money to K-12 and the next year we say, show us the results, when in fact, when you're dealing with a third grader, it takes years to get the results. So that has not really been a focus of this commission, this task force. Yes, Wendy and...
Yes, Mr. Chairman. On the teacher preparedness issue, it's a very complicated issue, and I think the bill that you passed is certainly a step in the right direction. Donald here asked the other day, how do we get students, more students, better students, interested in majoring in teacher education? That is a task before us, and we need to do that, and I think we need to do it in the same way that nursing did. Some of you may remember that nursing was in a terrible crisis, and they launched a national advertising campaign, basically, that just elevated the image of nurses in the workplace, that really had a huge impact on our ability to recruit people into that field. And I think we need to do the same thing for teaching. One of the things that we know is important for teachers to be successful in Alaska, and it's not money. That's not the first thing that teachers say when they leave. It is a lack of support. That's why the teacher mentoring program has been so important. So we really look forward to working with the legislature and with the Department of Education to make sure that we can continue the funding for that really important program. I was troubled at listening to the hearing that the Board of Regents gave to your committee that the University of Alaska is currently still supplying, I think they said 28% of the teachers in Alaska come from the University of Alaska. The balance of them come from out of state. We need to do a lot better than that. Now, I think if you look at the statistics, we're graduating more students than that, but they're not going to teach. So that's another avenue that we need to take a look at to find out why a lot of students want it. They may graduate in Anchorage, and if they don't get a job in Anchorage, they're not going to teach. They'll go do something different. So it's a more complex problem than it appears. But I think it's something that if your state's public university cannot get the teacher education thing right, shame on us. There shouldn't really be any higher priority, in my mind, than for us to be able to respond effectively to the needs of the public school systems in the state. So I think it's been extremely helpful to have the education committees ask for this report every year to keep that dialogue going, to keep the focus on these teacher education programs, and to work with us in how to shape them and make them better. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Wendy Barnes.
I would, of course, echo the support for the Mentor Project. There is no doubt that it is having significant impact on our first and second year teachers in their ability to understand their practice, understand their students, and want to continue to be educating Alaska's kids. There is no question about that. The impact has been significant. And I speak from personal experience, having been in the project for 3 years. It is significant and important, and every teacher who is beginning their career needs mentoring, support, help, and this is one avenue to do that, and every bit of support we can put into having a consistent mentoring project in the state is really important. So that's the first thing. And I would also like to address the issue of national board certification. Along with mentoring, national board certification has without a doubt and been well researched nationally to improve the achievement of students who are in the classrooms of teachers who are nationally board certified. The standards are very high. The program to go through to get national board certification is very rigorous. It takes well over a year to go through the entire process. My organization supports our members who are interested with an introductory course so that our folks understand what the whole process they're going to go through is all about. We fund that. We support them. The $2,500 that it costs a teacher to go through the process of becoming nationally board certified sometimes is a barrier, and so making funds available on an interest-free loan, on a grant is very, very helpful, and whatever support we can put toward teachers who are already nationally board certified and are working toward it is greatly appreciated and important to the success of our students, because we know that there is a significant track record of success when kids are taught by teachers who are nationally board certified. We currently have 120 teachers in the state who are nationally board certified. That's not enough. So the support is greatly appreciated, and the efforts of those who recognize the need to encourage more teachers to get this certification are very much appreciated.
Thank you very much, Howard. Steve.
Steve Bretz, Alaska Council of School Administrators. A couple things. First of all, I'm very appreciative of what the Senate's put in as far as the National Board certification. We have four or five teachers, I believe, in the Sitka School District at this time that are nationally board certified. And so any efforts along those lines is truly appreciated. It's great stuff. I'm in total agreement with Barb. If we had every teacher in the state nationally board certified, we'd be providing the best education probably in the world at this point. I would like to recommend, because I'm also in very strong support of the mentor program, and I you know, to be real honest, I was disappointed. And I know the politics are being played to a certain extent, but the mentor program here has the data to back it up that is just absolutely incredible what is happening with that mentor program. So any effort to keep that in the state of Alaska would be truly appreciated. Strange recommendation, take it for whatever it's worth, but if some way you could tie the mentor program and the National Board certification together, because they are very similar in some of the things that they're teaching
would be an outstanding type of situation. It would be a costly program if you did it. At the same time, if we truly want to improve education, it would be a great vehicle to get us there. The other thing about teacher training to me is we need to take a look, and I know I hear it in my hometown when we have a professional development day, all the teachers have another day off. Any school district that is legitimately trying to improve the educational process guards those professional development days very, very closely. And we are trying to align everything that we're doing with the data that we're getting back from our students testing and how to improve our teaching ability. So if you could look at anything, my hope would be to look at giving us some flexibility in the number of days that we can use for professional development. I'm not asking for you to add days. I'd love to add days to the school calendar, but that's extremely costly. I understand that. But flexibility in the number of days and hours that you give us would be truly appreciated also. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Other comments around the table? Yes, Representative Sisson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And my question is that I do see that President Donald Vance is here from APU, and it is in my district, and I'm proud to say that. So is UAA. And what I have seen, both as a student and as a legislator, the difference between the two schools and the kind of creativity that comes from a small independent private school. And I would like to ask President Vance if he wouldn't mind. I'm sure he has his own perspective on this that's different, because it's a different kind of institution. And tying the previous grades to then getting to the university, I know you've been working on ways to enhance the whole system, and if he could make a few comments on that.
Well, we will certainly volunteer him, Ms. President.
Well, I've been involved in teacher training for years and came from the most innovative program in the country, actually. What we found was...
And that was Evergreen?
Yeah, Evergreen State College.
Yeah,
we taught them how to teach and think. What we found out, the teacher dropout rate was 50% within the first 2 years. 50% of them left within the first 2 years because they'd go into this mind-numbing bureaucracy. So they had to be parents because the parents weren't doing the parenting. They had to do curriculum committees and teaching to the test, all the things that they knew didn't work, yet that's what they were forced to do. And so they got discouraged and left. They would go into private systems and alternatives. I understand it's not quite as bad up here. Some, I think Wendy said 50% go in 5 years up here for various reasons. But I think that's something we've got to address, the root cause. We can do we can train the best teachers in the world, but if they're going to drop out, what's the point? And so I think the mentoring, I understand, is very effective up here. We obviously need more of that. And, again, it's small. We're the, as I said yesterday, we're the last remaining four-year baccalaureate nonprofit institution in the state. And most of this work has been done on the public sector. And so as a private sector kind of being on the sidelines, we still think we have a role to play in terms of fostering that creativity, because we can do some things, with small class sizes in our teacher ed program and be a little more flexible. So we think we have a role to play in that, and we think we have something to say about it. In fact, one of my recommendations to this committee was we've got to set up an emerging pedagogies fund to really press the envelope about finding the most effective strategies that we know what works. Yeah, we know what works. It's just that we can't implement them through the large-scale bureaucratic system. That's where the breakdown occurs. And so I think you constantly need to bring the faculty together, whether it's board certification or summer institutes, to really hone their skills and find out what works, have them share stories, something we do a lot of, have faculty come together and share their stories, help plan, the pedagogy together, because we know it works. So I think I'll stop there.
Thank you. If I guess I'll follow on that, I think
that's why we have all the institutions in Alaska represented here, the colleges, the universities, the vocational programs, and to realize that there have been many paths towards completing an education. At one time, I was quite critical of the university because I would look at the different units of university and say, education, becoming a teacher is so different at each one. But you know, that's really healthy. That's really good. That's the way you should be. Some people, like my daughter, when she was decided to become a teacher, she wanted a program that was a year and a summer. She came to Southeastern. Others want to take a class here and a class there and take 10 years to become get their degree. So we have to accept that there are many ways to do it, and I think it's good that everyone has a role, and we all approach it a little differently.
Let me just one more comment. One of the things we say too is that it took us 2 years to develop a good teacher. We knew that. We knew it just takes that long. And there are a lot of folks coming in now, online and otherwise, get them in and out in 9 months, a year. And that it just doesn't work in our experience. And yet that's where the competition is, because you can get a degree online now that quick. And so, again, it's the issue of quality versus getting the tool to get the degree and get it.
Thank you, Doc. And Steve, I don't know if you mentioned that you are a superintendent of the Sitka School District as well as your other role, but so he's on the front line most definitely, Steve.
Okay, thank you. I promise not to take too much time. I think what we need to change in this country is the attitude that teaching is easy, because it's not, and it's extremely hard job. And if you have a masterful teacher in the classroom, you know that almost immediately. And I agree wholeheartedly. We have learned so much through research over the past 10 years. We can make the changes that need to be made. But my fear is I'm seeing a lot of people get out of the teaching profession because they're just getting the holy living heck beat out of them right now, and they don't have to take it. So I would encourage everybody to think about what it takes to be a teacher. The number of people that tell me that they could be a teacher, that's a piece of cake, and on and on and on. It's an incredibly tough job. And so I'm truly appreciative of the great teachers that we have, not only in this state, but around the country. And also understand the concern for public education and where we're going. But I think we need to get back on track and focus on our children. It's more about the kids than anything else. So teaching, not everybody can be a teacher. I don't care how many of them think they can, not everybody can.
Barb?
Barb and Guy, Kenny, Alaska. I would just make the statement that we do exit interviews with many teachers who leave the profession or leave the state. And the number one reason that they say they want to leave is not the salary, is not the community, is not a variety of over-testing, which is right up there. But the number one reason is because they do not feel supported. They do not, and it is not the fault of administrators. I don't believe that for a minute, because administrators are extremely busy and the work that they do is important. But to make sure that every teacher has the support they need is critical, because that is the number one reason they tell us they're leaving their classroom, is because they don't have support.
Thank you, Robert. Okay, we have a lot of, you have in front of you the draft, and again, I just remind you that that was just pretty much everything that has been suggested to us, whether we had gone into, had made a decision on it or not, is in that draft. There are some things I don't particularly like, some things I really like. For example, just tell you about things I don't like. I don't like the idea of having term limits on school boards. I think it works in Anchorage, where you have three-year terms. In my community, the problem is often getting someone to run for that school board, and if you have term limits, you may not may have a different, may be difficult. So that's an issue that you know may or may not end up in the end on our list. But I did want to just remind you that list you have in front of you is sort of the kitchen sink. Rather than get into the weeds here and talk about some of the specifics, since I know your time is short, I thought we'd back up a little bit and look at the big picture. But before we do that, Representative, you had a comment. Did you have your hand up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you have an agenda, follow up, I'll defer.
Well, it's just in the short time we have left. I mentioned the three big issues that I think we started out with, realizing that the first problem is students who go to the university vocational or on the job without preparation, without being totally ready to compete on the university level, vocational level. The second was counseling. The third was scholarships and financial aid. So let's start with that one issue of preparation. We can point lots of blame, but the issue is how do we really get students prepared to compete? And I'm going to actually ask the department if you would make some comments, because one of the things that came out, and we haven't really fleshed it out, is that maybe we need more academies, an academy-type situation in between high school and college to help students come up to speed, because what we're finding is when you send a young person to the university, they take a remedial education class. First, it's very expensive. You're paying the highest tuition in the state to take that class, and it doesn't count for graduation. So it doesn't lead you on to your degree. So maybe go back a little bit to K-12, to the department, and thoughts that the commissioner or Eddie may have on how do we move ahead and help students to be ready to compete when they do go out into life.
Thank you, Commissioner of Education Mike Hanley. I had a chance briefly just to speak with Wendy, and I've spoken to President Gamble with the university system as well. And I think we need to begin with understanding fully what where the exact shortcoming is. We recognize the need for remediation. We recognize that many of our students aren't coming out prepared. That's a given. Who are those students? Where are they coming from? Are they our traditional students coming out of high school? Are they the non-traditional students coming back to school to add some skills? Who are they? So once we identify that, and I need to do that, we need to do that in our department with the cooperation of the university system right away. Just some things that I spoke briefly to yesterday is that need, and there is an ability to track how many classes are needed? Are we looking at math? Are we looking at reading? Are we looking at writing skills that are needed? Does a student just need one course and that counts them for remediation? So just the depth of that need that we have, the need is there. And then how do we track it back? Can we track it back to some schools? And I think we have that ability to even look at tracking it back that far and working with those schools. That's just the identification, the specific identification of the issue. From there, we do have the need to look at the immediate remedy, and that is for those kids who are in that boat right now, that are right now in high school, possibly not getting what they need to be successful, and look at those ideas of academies. And I know former Commissioner Ledoux had started that conversation, some summer academies, and it may be summer school courses that are taking place before the senior year to get students identified and caught up. And we spoke to this yesterday, the picture is very broad, actually. If we really want to get back, we can go back then, back to early literacy, but I think we can't wait and start there. I think we need to immediately identify what we can do for our high school students now, and while we're doing that, begin to identify what we need to do to get our students in their early literacy programs set up so we don't see these gaps coming in the future. Relatively broad answer, but there are definitely some focus that we have in that area.
Thank you, Commissioner. Someone may have the statistic here. I don't recall what it is exactly, but it's a pretty shocking figure. Once a student goes to the university or college and takes a remedial class, the statistics of that person succeeding in life are really, really low. I mean, of that person succeeding in a college education. So once you're identified as someone who has to take remedial class, it's very hard to get back on track and be a fully functioning student. Wendy, would you have any comments on the university level, what we can do? We know what we're doing. We're sending students to remedial education classes. I know that's a big issue for the university and a tough one. How can we help out at the university level to get students better prepared? I know you're doing some summer programs, and maybe you'd have some comments on that.
Well, I think I think that Commissioner Hanley hit on one of the keys that I think is really important for all of us. We need to look at what we know works and take some examples from that. We know if you look at some of the successful programs like Rawhi and ANSTEP, we know that these summer intensives work for students to give them an early college identification experience, different kinds of intensive summer experiences. I know that APU is looking at putting some of those into place. Those have great potential. We know that Accuplacer works. We know that giving students a very realistic assessment of what their skills are while they're still in high school, them and their parents, is a very effective wake-up call for them. The university has been working with some districts to try to do this is what we use when they get to us, but we extend it down into the high school. We really need to be able to find the resources to do that, I think, all over the state because it's been so effective. So that's number one. Number two, I think it's very important for the university to, we do a lot of developmental education. We've got a lot of people doing it, but I think as somebody alluded to earlier, innovation is hard sometimes in a bureaucracy. So it's important for the university at this point in time also to take a look at what it's doing to see whether or not the way we've been doing developmental courses are successful. Just looking at the statistics, one would assume they're not really that successful. If students who are taking the developmental courses aren't effectively moving through the system to completion of a program, one needs to say maybe we need to find some better ways to deal with this issue. So I think it's incumbent on us to continue to look at best practices, to work on how we can do this more effectively. And I think we worked on one of those recommendations yesterday to sort of put a little more pressure on that. This isn't just a problem, as you know, for the University of Alaska. 50% of all incoming high school 18-year-olds going into college nationally are having to take one or more developmental course. So this is a problem all over the country. We've had many legislators question the university about why we have budget requests in the last 3 years. We've been requesting money for summer bridging programs for high school students. Why are you guys putting money into your budget? Why should we fund this in the university's budget? Well, because it is our business. We need to be able to work with these students before they come to us. It's much cheaper. It's much more effective. The younger we can work with these students to help them get their skills up to speed, the better for everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Raymond. Yes, Reverend Seaton, down at the end of the table there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'm encouraged to hear that the university will look at how they do this, and I think that we need to look at the nationwide data. I'm also on the WICHE Legislative Advisory Panel for the Western Interstate Commission on Higher Education, and you know the data nationwide is that if you give remedial courses, as somebody misses a little bit on their math, and so you make them take a 12-week course, there, as Senator Stevens alluded to, their chances of catching up and completing are low. Whereas if you just give them the information to bring them up to snuff on that particular part that they missed, then they are progressing through the system and they're much more successful, as well as there is the data. It's really funny. It doesn't matter whether you take it as a prerequisite or whether you take it simultaneously. It turns out that what we're testing people on for remedial is not what they need to be successful in college. They may be skills we want them to have by the time they get out of college, but our system says, oh, you are a little deficient in math, so you can't take any courses until you take this math course, which isn't the skills that you need to progress through your desired goal in college. So I think that I'm glad to hear the university is saying that, but you know, if we don't quickly get to recognizing nationwide research that says you only need to get them up to snuff on the things that they're missing, not just make them take 16 or 12 week course and everybody's the same. And they don't need to do that before they start taking their art courses or their history courses or all of their other courses, so that they do progress through. We've got this attitude that it's a prerequisite, and it shouldn't be, because the data says it's not prerequisite. It's something you want them to have before they graduate, but it doesn't stop them from being successful in other courses that they'd be in credit for. But we've been treating it that way, that you have to do your developmental courses before you can take other courses, and that's a, you know, been a very big detriment as far as completion goes.
Thank you, Reverend Seaton. We've got three people online that pretty often we have to work online as well, but we have Mike Andrews, the Executive Director of the Alaska Works Partnership. We have Peter Finn, who's the Chair of the Alaska Coalition of Student Leaders from the University of Alaska Anchorage. Fred Villa, who's a UA Associate Vice President for Workforce Program. So I know our time is short, and I really appreciate your being with us, but a couple other issues that we do want to touch on other than remedial education. The second one will be counseling and the importance of helping students to make sure they're on track and headed in the right direction. Peter Finn, would you mind if I call on you, since you've been quite vocal on this issue? Would you have any comments on the discussions that we've had and the importance you think of proper counseling for students?
Basically, all the discussions we've had talk about the possibility of adding board advisors and way back to the public advisor is. And after I've been on reviewing this election, I can see that the problem is we need to start consolidating advisors. Basically, when you go into the any university campus, there are 3 tiers of advising and characters. You have to take over advising. College advising for college arts and sciences or college and business, etc. And then you have your faculty advisors in the actual department. So when you apply for philosophy or economics or whatever it is. And with any different chain of advice, you'll often find that the advice you get depends on major stuff like what course you need to take. Actually very substantially. I was political science student, actually didn't know I did today. Going forward, graduated, so I taught my faculty by an instance of various chemistry, which isn't listed in the course catalog and previous advisor has chosen. And that's all the results of this. Even if I was in the past year, not every confirmation, so. That's a huge problem. The other huge problem is like when students want to transfer credit from one campus to another, they're going to UAS, UAA, and vice versa. You have a problem where campus might accept credit, but you might have one campus might not know, for example, if the credit you're transferring will apply for a teacher degree from local requirements. Or so quickly to transfer to the library. So they don't have a lot of these schools like transfer campuses, and when they arrive, find out they have to stay an extra semester or an extra year because the credit they thought they had as a requirement for their degree won't actually apply.
Oh, yes, exactly. Thank you so much, Peter. The one issue we haven't really had a chance to talk much about this morning is financial aid and scholarships. But, of course, the legislature is dealing with that, and we'll see where that goes. We wish you all luck on trying to assist in that area, because we know that many students drop out because for a lack of $1,000 or $500 or whatever. So financial assistance is most important. Scholarships, merit, and needs-based are important, so I wish you luck in working forward on that. So I do want to make sure we give you a chance to get to your meeting. I know it's about 4 minutes till, so thank you very much, all the legislators, for being here with us. We'll be giving you that report April 1st, and assume and hope that some legislation will follow for the following year in the legislature. So thank you all very much, and we'll stand at ease for a few minutes.
Thank you.